Okay, Zales, I'm going to start you with this one. 29 all the baby box against the New Zealand under 20 side. I know they like to be called the junior box, but I always think of them as the baby box. A game everyone expected them to win and win well. They 29-15 up. They get to 29-22. They have a gimme 3 points. They turn it down. They've already got the bonus point. They can't lose the tournament. They concede a try. 29 all, and New Zealand has a chance to win at 32-29. They would still win the title, South Africa, but then they get the ball in the 81st minute, 29 all, and they belt it into the grandstand and they celebrate a draw like it's something spectacular. And I just wondered in that moment, and kudos to them for winning it, I just wondered in that moment about their psyche, who walks off that field thinking about the World Cup and says, hang on a second, these guys were content to walk out of there with a draw and not go for the win, given they couldn't lose the title. What was your thought at that stage? Am I being unfair, or did it maybe cross your mind as well?
Mate, it crossed my mind because I received the WhatsApp from you immediately saying, I can't believe they kicked it out.
And I know that I didn't say it as politely as I said it this morning. I think there were a few expletives in that one.
I don't remember it like that. No, mate, I think you're 100% on point there. If you look ahead, you know, if you're the All Blacks, you go, look, we chased these guys down on their home patch to the point where they were just happy to settle with a draw and get away from it, you know. And I suppose that definitely does give the All Blacks another bullet, I suppose, in the magazine going into that that tournament. I also think that if the box had played on and somebody had got a crucial injury in that final 2 minutes, fellas, they chased the try, and then inevitably he didn't get it, we'd all say, mate, why don't you just kick the ball out? There's no need. I mean, now this bloke's injured. So I think your point is valid. I think it's a reflection of the fact maybe they were gassed, they were tired, the morale was maybe not there to push. And everybody was just like, listen, we've weathered the storm. These guys have chased us. We've won the tournament. Let's just get out of here.
Yeah, and I mean, well done to them. They didn't win it last year. And as Riley Norton said afterwards, it was the one they wanted, over and above, obviously, the bigger picture being the World Championship. But I don't know who plays for draws. I know Frans Steyn doesn't. I remember his last game at school, he for the win. Why do you want to draw a game? So kind of just left a little bit of a taste in my mouth, very different to the taste that I felt on Friday night when it went to the TMO. Leland Zaza scored. Why don't you dive and score? Then I thought, what a great cover tackle. Then I was surprised it went to the TMO, given the TMO hadn't kind of really intervened when they should have. And the Stormers got out there with 38 all. And I said, you know what? I don't really mind a draw. So 3 league points is better than one. So kudos to the baby box. Well done. They are the SANZAAR S under 20, SANZAAR under 20 champions. First time ever for them. And it sets them up well. Two wins and a draw. It sets them up for the World Championship in Georgia in 6 weeks' time. So Riley Norton, good one for you. He just keeps on bringing in those trophies. And a lot of Stormers boys doing quite well for them there. Of the Stormers contingent, who impressed you the most from the under 20s?
Well, it wasn't Marcus Miller, mate. It's a pity he didn't play in the tournament. I was very much looking forward to seeing him go, but I thought Riley Norton was outstanding, mate. Just great effort, great leadership, and just his contribution in some of the dirty work, I thought was top tier. So he's obviously a bright one to watch for the future. Then just a little side note, pity about Ethan Adams. Sorry that his tournament had to end that way. What a beast. And looking forward to seeing him get back ASAP.
Yeah, and then why there seems to be a big, big issue with finding quality winners in great abundance where there normally is in this province. The 10 seem to be dropping out of trees quite nicely. Our Weinberg old boy at 10. You like him?
Yeah. Yakin, I think, is playing fantastic rugby for the junior box. We've got some youngsters who are shining at the schoolboy level, and you saw Zeke on the weekend again starting for the Sharks. What a way to debut at fly half at the senior level. So, I mean, we've got an abundance of talent there. I mean, as you say, for years we were kind of scratching our head going, who's going to play fly half if Andre drops out, or who's going to play fly half if, you know, Morne Steyn's not available? So it's great to be in that position.
Which brings me to 10s. He's got a lot of flack. I don't know why. It's 147 points he scored. He and Chris Smith are top of the table now when it comes to point scorers in URC. I just thought Sasha Feinberg on Gomazulu was just outstanding against Ulster. The full bag of tricks. Scored a couple of tries. made a couple of tries, and then also saved a couple of tries. I mean, that guy's defense is one of the unsung aspects of his game. It reminds me of a young Johnny Wilkinson. He puts his body on the line. He fronted the big flanker at one stage, jolted him. I think they were trying to go to the TMO as well for a shoulder to the head, which it never was. And then a fantastic cover tackle. I mean, getting it, coming into his own just at the right time of the season. And that's what I'm finding when I look at the last round and then going into round 18. A lot of the big name players, the big guns, they start flexing their muscles when it comes to round 17, round 18. Playoffs are there, and then we all know what comes. 6 months of Springbok rugger. It's known when to peak and kind of knowing when to be there. And you know what they say, last one in is top of mind. So, Sasha, just outstanding game.
Yeah, sensational. Him and Damien Phillips, I thought, you know, two of the superstars, I suppose, in the team, like the most high-profile players, and just the effort that they made on defense in that game, sensational. Just the speed and the effort and the commitment to the cause, I thought was brilliant. Yeah, and then obviously Sasha with some of his kicks and some of his plays, his audacious creation and, you know, try assists and the rest of it. Just obviously top draw stuff.
And just his acceleration. I mean, that one where it was hard and kind of stuff. I mean, he was just walking, and then he beats the center. You know, he kind of sizes up the props and then beats the center. And there's a part of me that thought, I think you could actually do the outside swing on your own. Damien got caught there. But as much as I like to trumpet Sasha, obviously I like to trumpet Evan Ruiz, and that's one he will want to forget. Just in terms of big plays at moments, a bit of a brain implosion. I always say that's kind of, he just sent that highlights reel straight to Rusty. Every time Rusty doesn't pick him, he's going to haul out that highlights reel and show me that and say, and what do you say now? So I was a little bit frustrated given how well he's played all season, the maturity he's shown to his game. And then the one I expected to make a big box statement was going to be Evan Ruiz against Alston. Then it was another guy who made a statement to the national selectors, Giannis Augustus Trocki, who really played well. And then he's made Imi Khan help him by kind of like sitting down for 30 meters while he did a bit of a charge. He played well. Cammy Hunnicombe's come through into his sixth game now since that horrific injury had put him out for a year. Jasper Visser, we know he's back on the field in Japan. So the number eight stocks are there.
Yeah, look, loose forward is not a position that South Africa has anything even remotely that smells like a shortage of talents. Siba Mahashe from the Lions this weekend, I thought was outstanding. There's another guy who's bursting through. You've got the Chituka brothers. You could go on and on and on and on. We've got a massive, massive pool of loose forwards to choose from. Whoever you pick, you're leaving out somebody who's amazing. I still rate Evan Ruiz extremely highly. And amongst our sort of heavy weather, direct north-south runners, I think he's right up there. But definitely that'll be a game he'll want to improve on, and hopefully we see that reaction this week against Cardiff.
And then, I mean, the big talking to him, Branas, just, I mean, you know, Dobbo spoke about it afterwards. There's this obsession in rugby at the moment, and we all know, it's like, let's stop any potential lawsuits that are coming when it comes to accidental head clash. And I'm not for one moment knocking the fact that rugby is a dangerous game. Concussions do exist, and there can be ramifications. There's a hell of a lot of guys who play this game. A lot of them who play it professionally. And if you had to rule every accidental head clash, you wouldn't have a pick and go. You could rule 40 of them in the game. We tend to rule the ones that happen in back play, mostly at an angle. But everyone's been talking for a long time now. The croc roll should be ruled out of the game in the sense that that's where your biggest damage gets done. Taking guys' knees out at the ruck, at the breakdown, lower backs, far more permanent damage than accidental head clashes. And Dion Fleury's won the ball. The penalty's been given, and Ian Henderson basically does the tackle. And then, you know, whether it's malice or not, it to me is as irrelevant. How it was only even given a yellow card, it quickly got upgraded to a red card. But no hoo-ha about that. That could potentially be the end of this guy's career, given he's 40, he's come back from so many injuries, and that knee. And that's what that's the biggest irritation I have with rugby at the moment, is we will talk about an accidental head clash, you'll go back and refer it for 5 minutes, where it could be the guy slipped or the guy's ducked, and it's very contentious. But when we see the blatant ones, no one cares. It's when we see Ethan Hooker getting jumped on and he's out for 3 months, no one seems to care then. And it just pisses me off, bud.
Yeah, no, look, I can completely relate to that, and I agree on all counts there. I think there's a much longer list of former rugby players whose lifestyles have been impacted by lower back injuries, knee injuries, neck injuries, and have to live with it every single day. So I think that is an issue to definitely try and tackle. And I think back to the evolution of Super Rugby. We had the experimental law variations and all that sort of stuff. Remember back in the day, they got really, really tight about entry into breakdown in terms of you had to come through the gate, and it was all about taking off and landing and what a bird can see and all sorts of stuff. But they used to be really strict about entering north south and kind of policing that. And I think rugby's got quite far away from that. And I understand the motivation behind it because the game flows more, you have fewer penalties. But I think you're getting a lot more side entries basically to breakdowns now than ever before. And I'm not saying this was the case in this Brunners incident, but I just think that you probably limit the opportunities for those kind of things to happen if the entries are more vertical than semi-horizontal, but yeah, definitely I thought that that was an incident that, very, very unfortunate. You think of how hard Brunners has worked to get back onto the field, the number of serious injuries he's had. You just got to hope that that this isn't the end for him, and that he bounces back quickly from it. But definitely a trend of some of the older guys. I mean, Ethan Hooker's obviously a youngster, but some of the older guys breaking down as we get closer and closer to the test season, and as we get closer and closer to the 2020.
Yeah, and then you look at a guy like Rod Venter. I mean, he's played so well. He was unfortunately got that suspension. He came back. He got a concussion. I mean, he's that hybrid role of going from close side flank to number four lock, and he's certainly been one of the form forwards in South Africa, and someone that's knocking on that Springbok door for him to potentially. We don't know how serious it is on this Monday morning for him potentially be out for a few months. You just think this was going to be his breakthrough season. His name are not being there with the injuries. You start looking at areas that we thought we were very strong in terms of depth. Come this international season that's going to have 14 matches. We start off on the 20th of June against the Barbarians, and then the 13 matches, 13 test matches, including four against the All Blacks, rugby's greatest rivalry. Three of them in South Africa, one in Baltimore. But lock position is one that you're starting to think, like, hang on a second, who's still going to be standing? And you think a guy like Eben Etzebeth has timed it to perfection. The way to make sure you play 12 to 13 test matches is play one game for your club. I mean, he's been outstanding. And you can see
Mate,
why
this is this has to be this
Randburg
book's
is saying, hang
rugby,
on a
mate.
second, Zimbabwe. I don't yet know if I want to go there. Maybe last man standing about the South African contingent in URC when it comes to locks. But like we say,
Yeah.
loose in abundance, some really good fly off, but scrum off and lock at the moment. Not looking quite as healthy and as fat on the bone as it did 6 months ago.
Yeah, no, totally. And I suppose anytime you have these veterans that sustain their positions in the top teams in the world and kind of own it and are there week in and week out, there's no other way, there's no other outcome that you're going to get than a vacuum behind those guys to the next tier because everyone's waiting for their turn to play. When you've got a bloke like Eben who's played 650 tests, it's quite difficult to kind of give other guys opportunities around that. So, you've got Luit Diakha, you've got Sean Clain, you've got Ahir Snyman, you've got Eben, Peter Steph Du Toit is a guy you can have in that conversation, Franco Mostert. All of those guys are, you could argue, on the wrong side of, what is it, 32, I suppose. And so this is one of the pitfalls of that is the injury thing and the recovery time from those injuries at that age. So I've got no doubt that we've got lock talent in this country. We just spoke about Riley Norton, but the point is that talent hasn't been thrust into the furnace, right? That we haven't tested them at the hottest levels yet because these other blokes have been getting gaps. So that's where the injuries start to raise questions about the not the credibility, but the battle readiness. Are they battle tested at that next level? And I suppose that's something we're going to find out if these injuries continue.
I mean, we're going to round 18 this weekend. Stormers second, Bulls fourth. They have qualified already. The Lions started round 17 in third place. SA Shield champions, everyone gung-ho. Rudolph Stroyley saying, "We never doubted Cash. How could you guys doubt Cash?" And there could be, and it's not the biggest chances it could be that they don't make the top eight. If every other result went against them, I don't think it's going to happen. I think they just do have enough comfort to squeeze into a sixth or seventh place. But it shows you how quickly things change in this competition. No one expected Munster to fall away against Connacht, 26-7, a bonus point win there. It puts Ulster in a difficult position. They now have to basically get something out of the match against Glasgow. Do they sacrifice that and pick their best team to go play Montpellier in the EPCR Challenge Cup final the week after that? Or do they say, handle, because Montpellier is second in the top 14. Or do they say, we have to go for both, or we could be nowhere. We lose that final, doesn't give us automatic qualification to the Investec Champions Cup, and we end ninth, we don't get in. So there's so much jeopardy going into this last round. You get the Stormers, they win, they will consolidate second position. Worst case scenario, they'll finish third. The Bulls, they're good for fourth. I'm backing them to get the 5 points against Benetton. And the Lions, the team we were raving about, they had such incredible form at Ellis Park. They go on the road, and in the last 10 minutes, you just get the feeling right now, are they really good enough to challenge for this title on the road? And my answer is emphatically no.
No, look, I don't think the Lions can win the URC on the road, and just winning a playoff game on the road, I think, is the equivalent of a final for them. To be fair, they did have to go to Dublin. It's not like they were playing Zebre in Italy, and they have to play Munster in Limerick, I think it is. So those are two tough assignments, arguably the toughest aside from the AFL Challenge, I suppose, for the European sides. And I thought the Lions did a great job right up until the point where they started kicking kickable penalties into touch and trying to force lineouts and things. I think that was an admission that they don't know when they're going to get back to that side of the field. So let's try and get the most points while we're there. And I think Leinster have seen that many times. So I think when you've got the accountant at 10 and you get an opportunity to put 3 points on the board in a 14-7 game, you take it. And I think that's probably a bit of a learning for them. Having said that, they did lose Ruaan Venter, like you mentioned earlier, and that would have shaken their plans a bit. But all in all, I was impressed with the effort right up until that last quarter when the floodgates just opened and Leinster's class came through. And that's something that hopefully the Lions can pull together against Munster this week. But it's going to be an interesting finish. Like you say, everybody's position's kind of in flux in terms of where they might finish. If you try and forecast the quarterfinals, it's quite dicey. But I've got a good feeling the Lions are going to be there and they're going to be in Cape Town playing the Stormers. That's my guess.
So you're saying three plays six or two plays seven? Or do you say
Or maybe
one
we're going to find out.
plays eight? Or
We're going
one
to find
plays
out.
eight? That's going to be the contest. But a name that didn't get mentioned after the Leinster game was Jacques Nienaber. Now, the Lions arrived in Dublin having scored the second most points in the competition. The Bulls had gone past them on Saturday for most points, most tries. And this Leinster side, having made 12 changes from the side that beat Toulon, limits this Lions attack to one try. And they were in their faces. It was typical Jacques Nienaber, aggressive line speed in your face for 80 minutes. And the Lions looked uncomfortable. They were forcing things. Like you say, it needed Chris Smith, the accountant, Sack's old boy, Marty's old boy, it needed him to basically play a bit more field percentages and not play that helter-skelter game, which suited the tempo that Leinster wanted to play at. But Jacques Nienaber's defensive mongrel was so evident in that game, and it really upstaged and upset the Lions. And what I took from that game, just as an observer, was there's league play and there's playoff play. And playoff play is not won by attack, it's won by defense. And that was a prime example of a mature team, even though there were 12 changes. A mature team that's been to plenty playoffs, and they played playoff rugby, and the other team was playing league rugby to try and force things, and were never going to win it. And then in the last 10 minutes, three tries, 19 points, 14-7 quickly became 31-7. And some people say an injustice to the Lions for efforts, but when you win 31-7, you've given them a good pasting.
Mate, you said that Jacques Nienaber wasn't mentioned in the post-match chat. Rico Ioane actually did say, "Ons weet wat hulle weet." So I think that was Jacques' influence on Leinster's plan, mate. They knew the Lions. They knew the Lions. Jacques had got them prepped for it. I thought their defence was outstanding, mate. Like you said, to limit the Lions like they did was something else. That, you know, in a way, they're like the Crusaders, aren't they? Just sharpening up at exactly the right time of the season. They're going into the sort of sharp end of the season. Somehow, Leinster going into the sharp end of the season with people having a giant question mark hanging over them. Can they really hold up against Bordeaux? You know, can these guys win the URC? That's exactly where they want to be. So I think they're pretty dangerous.
But I mean, we talk about Leinster in the URC and oh, they've dropped games. They've dropped 6 out of 17. And then I look at the Bordeaux Béglés. They've dropped quite a few in the top 14. They're fighting to get into that top six at the moment. So it's again, we keep on talking about this to a South African audience. This whole Investec Champions Cup balancing act with either the top 14, the Prem, or the URC, it's not the easiest thing to do. And that's why the double has been done so few times where a team can actually win both. You see Toulouse when they got beaten, all their focus obviously on top 14, 51-27 at Toulon at the Stade Mayol against Toulon. They lost at home a week before that to Clermont with their full strength side there. Bordeaux haven't exactly been cleaning teams up at the moment. Their focus clearly on the Investec Champions Cup. And I do believe there's enough in Leinster to go and be competitive in that final and back themselves to win it. And then feel that they're well enough prepared with their squad they've got to do damage in a playoff system, quarterfinal, semi-final, and potential final in the URC. And that comes down to who has the greatest squad depth. And I just found when you looked at the Lions, you looked at the Stormers, even to a degree, that squad depth still isn't quite there when you're thinking a team that can go top four in both competitions, potentially to a final in both competitions.
Mate, I just want to say that I hope those pings is money coming in and not money going out.
You hear those guys go ping? I could tell
Mate.
you where I think that is from, but
Don't say it, mate.
I won't.
So, mate, you're talking about the Stormers, obviously disappointing results at Ulster in Belfast, primarily because I thought they did a great job sort of controlling the game. They looked to be the dominant team. The attack was on fire. Most post-contact meters per carry of the season for us. And I thought we were right there, mate. We did everything. You know, we got right to the front door. We just couldn't get it across the line. And I think that's the disappointing thing. It's frustrating because I think it's quite a big swing. You know, you turn those into tries. And it's not just that, you know, you're going to win 58-38. You're probably going to win, you know, by 20 points. You know, you're going to win 45-20 or something. You know, so it's quite a big swing when you don't get it right. And you know, that's something that we need to obviously improve on. And I think that's a big focal point for the team. And this week you come up against the Cardiff side that technically you have to be on point four because they've got a great defense. They've got a massive kicking game, and obviously they're at home where they don't lose very often, if at all. So it's a huge challenge, and you know, as much as it doesn't bode, sort of, it doesn't instill confidence when you don't go on a long run of wins. And I'm saying this for all teams. The reality is that a team of the Stormers' potential or the Bulls' potential, just given the quality of player in there, if they turn it on, they can beat anybody on the day. And I think you know, everybody's just waiting for it to click and for that consistency to come through. So good feelings. Hopefully the playoffs go the right way. We get into the playoffs the right way. And the Stormers have definitely got the firepower to win the URC. It's just about everything coming together for that full 80-minute performance when it matters most.
Right, so I mean, realistically, you're looking at the Stormers, Bulls. Those are going to be our greatest challenge if it comes to winning this title or being in a final. Bulls, 54 points to 19 against Zebre. Zebre's got the worst defense in the competition. They're bottom of the table, 2 wins from 17. Context is everything there. Johan Ackermann, happy with the result, not happy with the performance. Understandably so, it was sloppy. They scored 8 tries. They could have had a lot more. I think in an ideal world for him, he just doesn't want to see 3 tries leaked against a side like that. But they did the job. Great to see Cam Hanekom get through so much time and do so well. Marco van Staden playing at hooker, doing the business. Room for Mark doing well. I mean, Chezol Yuster only lost at 40, but looked good. Kaner Moody keeps on improving the more game time he gets at 13. And then the old master starts at 10, kicks seven conversions, scores a try. Willie LaRue, I think he kicked two conversions in his entire career for Toyota Verblitz in 2022, and he had three by the 20th minute against Zebre. So it's hard to criticize a team that
Mate,
gets
you just know that hamstring's tight today, mate. That right hamstring from the kicking is very tight today.
Well, he kicks on the left foot, so I think it's the way he
Oh,
landed on
sorry,
the
yeah, the
right
left foot.
foot. But again, I think 2 months ago, the Bulls supporters would have taken 54-19 after what was happening to them. So they should be getting the 5 points against Benetton, who were woeful in Durban. A side like that with 10 internationals for Italy and Jacob Omonga, who's played for England, to be 41-0 down going into the 77th minute. This is a week after beating Leinster. I mean, they've chucked in the towel, haven't they?
Man, I don't know. I don't really know what to say about that. I don't know if Jake found the secret to that gondola water, mate, and somehow got it back to South Africa. But they definitely didn't look at the races at the weekend. And yeah, I mean, just some of those attempted tackles by them was a joke. I don't know if it's too early to talk about the Steco power play, mate, but it's definitely coming from that game. And Benetton will be disappointed with that result.
Well, the Steco Power Play, I mean, one of our wonderful partners, Andre Esterhazy, is the ambassador hybrid. It's the hybrid power tool hero of the week. I want to give it to Andre the Giant every week, but let's hear what he has to say.
Some players choose a side. They've always said a back can never be a forward. But with Steco, Ryobi didn't just reinvent the rules, it changed the entire game. Hybrid tools for a hybrid craftsman. Steco, shaping the future. 40 years of Ryobi credibility.
I mean, Andre the Giant, do we give
Mate, I can't believe he told the ref that he knocked the ball on scoring that try. No, that was great. That is something that's very unique to rugby, I think. Great sportsmanship there. But mate, the hybrid power tools hero for me has to come from the hat trick hero, the boogeyman, Jorenzo Julius, mate. His first try, he gets the ball, mate. I think it's in the 22. He dummies the one wing. He spins out of the scrum half's tackle. Now he's going backwards towards the try line. While he's trotting backwards, he fends off the 12, and then he turns and powers through the other wing's tackle. I'm not sure what more a guy is supposed to do to earn this award. It's obviously become very popular amongst the players, but he would be my of the week.
All right, there was a little bit of static there. It is raining. The rain is so bad in Cape Town that the Stormers, the one positive about being in Cardiff is that they're not playing in Cape Town this week. Honorable mention for me, Sasha Fahmy Zuma-Zulu, always. I mean, just 21 points, but it's again the tries he saved, what he does on the field, just the time he has on the ball. But 100% agree with you, Zales, in terms of the boogeyman. But the guy on his inside, Andre the Giant, he has flourished as a captain, as a leader, and just his inspiration. So, and I never go against you when it comes to the Steco hybrid hero. So it is Jorenzo Julius. Talking about hybrids, though, brother, your mate Lester F. Let's hear him say
Lester
it.
Faenginuku, yeah.
I love you saying it.
Lester Faenginuku.
7 and 12, mate. And he was brilliant against the Blues. A couple of chip kicks as well. He needs a repertoire.
Well, I mean, he's basically playing 10 now, isn't he?
I mean, again, South Africa leading the way there with the way they look at selections. And the crazy thing is, when Scott Robertson did pick him, he stuck him in the 23, but only as a winger. Never even thought of bringing him to flank. What I do love about New Zealand, though, is they think everything's hunky-dory because they just told Dave Rennie, Richie Mo'unga, even though he's going to be back in the country, he's not going to be allowed to play against South Africa because he has to play for Canterbury in the NPC, even though he signed for 18 months, because it sends out the right message as they drop another test. And then their acting CEO, Lancaster, saying, "We know the system works for us. Mate, the system doesn't work for you.
The system isn't
Five of your best players aren't being picked, and it could be why you're taking some record defeat. And
mate.
why South Africa is one in the world and you're two." But what I did say, Zells, was please continue thinking it works for you, because we in South Africa have no objection to you not picking the likes of Richie Mwanga to play against us. Outrageously simple, narrow-minded and insular once again from New Zealand. And I'm sure Dave Rennie must have thought Japan didn't look too bad at this stage when he starts hearing that.
This is what it must have felt like in the 90s as an All Blacks fan to be watching South African rugby and the decisions that came out of here then. Because it's just crazy. I don't think they realize how deep a hole they're in there and how much work they have to do to get out of it and how little time there is till that next World Cup. This series against the Springboks, I think, would be the perfect time to bring Richie back in. They've already established that between Bowden and D-Mac, they're not going to get the answer there. I think probably some of the sort of grey-haired guys have decided that this is the only way to secure an opportunity for Ruben Love to start at 10 at some point. And maybe that's fair play. I don't know. We'll get those answers, I suppose, during that series. But I think that's a crazy call. If I was the All Blacks, I'd say, Dave Rennie, here's the keys. Do whatever you got. If you want us to play in purple, we'll play in purple. Just get us back to winning ways pronto. So I think it's a nuts call. Back to Leicester by Ngannou. Maybe they need to try Jordy Barrett on the flank, mate. It worked for Andre Estes and it's working for Faye Ngannou. Let's see Jordy Barrett get in there. Let's see what else we can do. Maybe David Avili, mate. But I do think that if they try that at the All Black level, I think Leicester may not enjoy the same experience at the breakdown with the likes of Marco van Staden, Malcolm Marks, Theo Kolisi, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So let's see.
But if you look at New Zealand's Super Rugby and the wonderful interview that Sir Graham Henry did a couple of weeks ago, when he said the Super Rugby tournament is just not good enough to produce a World Cup winning test team or a very competitive test team that could be number one, why he felt also South Africa had the edge on New Zealand. And he also felt the fact that South Africa does pick from all over the world, it brings such a mentality that is different because you are embracing different cultures, embracing different trends. And he just felt that New Zealand have become too insular in their thinking because it's same old, same old. And it reminds me of before your time, Zales, when you were a pup and I was a grey old man already, was when we were in 14 isolation. And we thought we could beat everyone because our Curry Cup was so strong. And when we came back into rugby in 1992, we got a hell of a shock. I mean, we got two late tries against New Zealand to make it look respectable at Ellis Park. We were 27-10 down going to the last 2 minutes, 26-3 at Ellis at Newlands against Australia. Got beaten horribly by England at Twickenham, knocked over once by France quite comfortably in Paris. That 92 comeback season was such an eye-opener to us to, while we think we've been doing it so well and so specially, the world had moved on. And I think New Zealand are a bit in that phase. They think everything is perfect in Super Rugby Pacific, but it's not, because they play against themselves and they play against an Australian setup that is very similar. And then they come into a test match against a good pack, a French pack, an English pack, a South African pack, and all of a sudden, even a Scottish pack where they struggled against, and everyone looks pretty damn ordinary again. So I think COVID did them a big dirty in terms of the insular nature of no one was let in for 2 years. And they've really been operating since South Africa were out of Super Rugby in their own little world. And it kind of shows they may be ranked two in the world, but the mentality is of a top five team, not a top two team.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think Razor's probably a great bloke, but I think where they went with Razor, finally appointing him, probably much later than they should have. I think they're probably, and they have a right to feel like this, probably are disappointed that they didn't get the Russi out of Razor, in the sense that, like, people like to compartmentalize things, go, oh, the box are so great because they've got all these players playing overseas, other nations are paying their salaries, they've got this massive player pool, and that is true. But I think that if you gave this team over to a comedian, the Springboks would not be successful, right? And so I think people underestimate the value of having a coach who has a clear vision, a clear plan, and knows the detail of how to transfer the vision into the actual practical performance, and that's Russi. And so I think that's what they belatedly were hoping that Razor was going to bring to the party, but it turns out in hindsight that he was nothing like that. He was a concept guy, it seems like, and a bit of a visionary who maybe didn't have all those details nailed down. And I think Dave Rennie is probably closer to what they expected to get out of Reza. And so anything that pulls the handbrake up on what Reza, what Rennie's trying to do is a very, very bad decision. And so to your point about how they, you know, how they think they've got it nailed down at the moment, I think that's the real sting in the tail of South Africa leaving. We talked about how they missed the physicality, but the real thing there is that it gives them perspective and context to the quality of their rugby. If they keep running at Australians, they're going to think they're still world champions. But, you know, you needed the box there just to remind you, hey, the intensity level goes up a little bit against these guys. And I think that's what they're missing massively. And I'm not really sure how they can ever replicate that. Even if Rennie gets in there, he's still getting his guys from Super Rugby. You know, where do they go to find that brute physicality?
Yeah, but and again, you know, you want the All Blacks to be competitive for this to be the greatest series, to kind of start challenging the concept of a British and Irish Lions as a concept, the British and Irish Lions series and tours. Yeah. And having the All Blacks in this country for three test matches, the fourth one in Baltimore. And as I say, there will definitely be a winner. If it comes down to goal kicking, we got to back ourselves to be that winner. If it comes down to cleaning out the ruck, we got to back ourselves. If it comes down to if it comes down to back three play, well, maybe they've got a chance. So you want them to be strong. And what I did like about that under 20 performance was a New Zealand side that played with Tikka and played with Mongrel and were physical and competitive and fought back from 29-15. I know they made quite a few changes, probably underestimated Argentina in the down under 20 tournament and didn't quite have the depth, but they. Their best 23 against pretty much our best 23. It was even Stevens. And looking at that scoreboard near the end, it gave me a little bit of a, yes, is this how the three test matches are going to be late in the year when the seniors and the big guns come out? And you would like to think that New Zealand will give themselves every chance to be successful and to repeat the 96 historic first ever series win. And then when you keep on going back to a rule book that's so outdated in how you apply principles of your game and say, we're not going to pick this guy. He's got to go play one game, at least for Canterbury against God knows who, to prove he's good enough to go on the end of the year tour when he's already committed for 18 months to be in New Zealand. It's just madness. But it's a madness, madness that I love. It's a madness that I love and long may it continue. You spoke about you could give the team, the Springbok team, to a comedian and it just wouldn't get the same results. And I hasten to remind you, we did give it to a comedian and we were seventh in the world. So, we then gave it to a doctor and we now won in the world and we've won everything. So,
oh, no, mate. What?
Long may it continue that New Zealand keeps on getting it wrong and we keep on getting it right, mate. Honestly,
no,
I love it.
No, exactly. Yeah, no. It's glorious. I'm absolutely loving it. It is fantastic to see, mate. I know you wanted to talk some schoolboy rugby, mate. Let's get into it. What are you thinking there? What did you see at the weekend? You mentioned Sacks so valiantly and bravely early on with such optimism. How did they do it the weekend, mate?
Mate, typically they went down to Rondebosch 1917. Sacks are like Scotland. Brave. Heroic. But invariably second. Okay. And then... the team that we love now, because everyone loves a winner, Stellenberg, they edged Oakdale 15-13. In Middelburg, it was like 11,000 people there for Hot Test. Middelburg against Middelburg, one of the big derbies. Nootval, I mean, there's like 30 matches going on there. It was amazing. Some of the showdowns, how strong rugby is up there. Hartsfontein still doing well. They would say, hey, we got claims to potentially being one in the country. They did edge Stellenberg in one of the festivals in the last minute. But then going to, and then Paul Rus won comfortably, Paul Khim won comfortably, Boys High lost 32-22 against Grey College in Bloemfontein. But the one that intrigued me was your guys in KZN. It looks like you've either got to win or lose by 1 or 2 points. Very close matchups there.
Mate, let me just mention that Millies went down to Belleville. It was just a bit of a disappointing result. Hilton smashed Glenwood, mate. Remember the mighty Glenwood, unstoppable for a while. And then Maritzburg College, they edged DHS, mate. And Northwood, 5-point win over Westville.
Yeah, well, Glenwood was strong when they basically bought the whole of the SA school side. Then Shawnee Rasmus was coaching there, and it really became a professional rugby academy.
Those I think days, John Allen played a few games for them, mate.
off the bench. Those days are gone. Shawnee Rasmussen went to Cowboys High, did incredible stuff with them for 5 years, went to the Lions, into the under 20 set up there, and he's back with Cowboys High. So he's got a bit of restructuring to do there. But our school's rugby, strong as always. There's something like 70 games that I glanced at, just the results, and I know there's about another 30 that weren't on the various sites. But if you go to Schoolboy Rugby, to me, it's the best Schoolboy Rugby site. If you just want a wrap, you go to SA Rugby Magazine. Dill Johnson puts together a fine wrap there. And then we like to boast on our show, we like to boast about winners. And this season, Flavor of the Month, the J Brigade, Stellenberg High. I think they've still got Paul Boys high to go this season, but when I look at the other opposition, I can't see anyone coming close to them. And in their 40-year history, that would be the most successful first team that they've had. I did look at some of the other results from under 16s down to under 14s. It may not be as flash next year, but who knows who they can get in the off season. But Schoolboy Rugby strong and no show with us. We mentioned him a bit earlier, but Frans Steyn in the SA Cup, Cheetahs. And he said, "The boys saved my ass." So those were his words. Otherwise, if we weren't in the Currie Cup, he said he may not be in a job. But I think a young guy called Liam Coon saved his backside. He
Indeed.
missed the conversion, unfortunately. Griquas went down by a point. And again, a lot of jeopardy going into that last round. Heineke Meyer's done wonders with SV Adia. They got a massive win, but then Willem got an even bigger win against EP. 80 plus points they scored. And edged out SV Adia on points differential. So Heineke's back in the business and already transformed a team that was nowhere a season ago, which also again just shows you the value of IP. And if you've got coaches who have coached at the highest level in our system, use them.
Mate, 100% agree with that. Not sure the value of some of the lower teams in the SA Cup. I mean, we've got, I think it was Border conceded 93 tries in 9 games, mate. We need to improve that. We need to help those guys. And Leopards were not that far behind either, 73 tries in 9 games. So that's something we want to improve. Maybe they need some of that IP, mate. We need to get that IP over there, help those teams improve. But definitely, I think Hartbeespoort and Heineke Meyer in the SA Cup, you couldn't have dreamed about having something like that at that tier of our rugby. Massive, massive, massive resource for us and our players. If we do uncover any rare diamonds at that tier and it progresses through the box, we'll have guys like that to thank for it. I think Piet Bach is obviously doing a great job with Griquas and of Jimmy Stonehouse, Mr. Biceps. Pumas are flying. Everybody's rooting for France and the Cheetahs. So yeah, I mean, I think the playoffs are definitely going to be worth watching. And you know, everybody's got their heart in their sleeves. In those sort of playoff games for national honours, you know, it's going to be great.
All right, and then just before we go, a reminder to enter the competition, 100,000 rand to be won. Register all your details. You don't have to put your bank details there just yet, and you could win 100,000 rand. End of June, we'll make that draw, and you get free access to SA Rugby Magazine's monthly digital version, brilliantly produced by Simon Borchardt, the editor. But Zels, I know you're a guy who loves conflict, confrontation on a rugby field, not off the field, on the field. Rugby is a collision game. It's not ballet, as it's not a dance. It's a collision game. It's a contact sport, as Heineke Meyer famously always or infamously said, depending on who you are when you listen to it. And I know you're a big fan of Henry Pollock and the fact that he's so involved in games and he's a bruiser. Did you see his bruising escapade on the weekend when Northampton lost by a record score to Leicester when he took on a South African? Maybe he was trying to suss things out before the 4th of July fireworks. But Andre Liegenberg, it was a bit like Anthony Joshua against Jake Paul, suitably embarrassing with a smile.
Man, it was like watching like a Chihuahua barking at a Doberman. You just like, I mean, I don't really know what result can come out of this except for one. And yeah, and it's getting a bit farcical now. I think he just needs to let his play do more of the talking. I think his talking is doing too much of the talking now. And I think he needs to choose his battle a little bit more wisely. He's still a huge fan of his, and I still think he's exactly what English rugby needs. But maybe we're just getting a little bit into the sort of Don King territory now.
But if I mean Eddie Hearn is signing, for those who don't know, Eddie Hearn's one of the biggest boxing promoters, so maybe he thinks he is a boxer. But I went on to some of the comments, not in SA Rugby, but the overseas comments, to see what they have to say about their own guy. And it reminded me a bit of when Willie Mason, the Rugby League Australian player, knocked out one of the Great Britain players in a Rugby League International. And at the sixth touchdown, for those who haven't seen it, the English player pushed Willie Mason. Willie Mason then just clocked him. Down he went. And the commentator on the replay said, if you're going to push and shove, you got to keep your mitts up. So when I looked at Henry Pollock, it's like, one, if you're going to pretend to be a boxer, you've got to put your gum guard in and you got to throw a punch.
Exactly, mate.
It was dance. And Andre Liebenberg will be coming back to the balls, looked at him with a smile. But the most telling thing for me, Zells, was that half the Northampton team, when he started, just turned around and walked away. They were just not interested in it whatsoever. I'm reminded of what Jamie George said when they interviewed him, the Saracens, England, and the British and Irish Lions hooker. And he spoke about the value of Pollock. And he said, everyone has an idiot. And in this case, he's ours. So.
Was so well said.
So be warm, Zells. Get back into that duvet. Love to the family. We'll be
thanks, mate.
As soon as the sun comes out. Good luck to you guys this weekend. Cardiff, get the win. We'll be rooting for the Bulls and obviously the Lions in Munster. They just get 1 point out of that, I think they'll be safe. But given the way Munster are going, we never give up on the Lions. As Rudolf Stroyli said, don't doubt us. We've never doubted cash. Yeah.